Welcome to The Systemic Way. In today's episode, we meet with the developers and facilitators of the Parents in a Park program. We meet with Claire Field, who's the managing director, and Cam Core, who is a social worker and a systemic practitioner. The Parent in a Park program is an early intervention program that aims to improve the emotional and physical well-being and mental health of children whose parents are going through divorce or separation. Through their program, they aim to support parents to work towards outcomes that are beneficial for the whole family, and the voice of the child is central to their program. They aim to change the mindset of parents in order to prioritize the needs of their child, to enable better communication between parents in order to create a more stable and sustainable parenting environment, and to encourage parents to make their own decisions regarding future plans through what they call establishing a parenting working agreement. Claire Field is the managing director of the program, and we hear how she has used her experience of working with parents going through separation for many years and brought this unique program in order to avoid many families finding themselves in the court processes. Pam is a senior social worker and a systemic practitioner. We hear how she has brought her experience of working with families for over 20 years in case management, risk assessments, and crisis intervention, and across social services in the public sector and mental health. And we hear how she has brought some of her training in systemic psychotherapy into the development of the Parent in a Park program.
Wow, thank you, Cesar. It's incredible the experience that exists between these two women who are a part and big part of the Parenting Apart program. And I suppose I was just thinking when I was hearing you then about how fortunate we, or how lucky we've been really, to have the opportunity to speak with them, to hear their personal connections to the program, but also to really hear in detail about how they developed it, the feedback that they've got from people that they've worked with. And I suppose it brings the program alive. You know, it's one of those things that people might have heard about, you might have come across, but this is a very sort of intimate conversation, I suppose, with Cam and Claire to get a deeper feel for the program overall.
Yeah. I remember leaving that conversation feeling very infused and thinking, okay, I feel much more equipped after the conversation to work with families going through separation and divorce. It's always a very challenging area, can be full of a lot of conflict and breakdown in communication. And just hearing how Claire and Cam have shaped and developed the model in response really to the needs of families, and really focusing on centralizing the voice of the child as being a major ethic of theirs, has created a real map and model of addressing some of the difficulties that come up in these situations. So I found it particularly very helpful for my work context, and I hope people listening will also. And just to also mention, a lot of systemic ideas are very much connected and aligned to the work that they're doing. And there's a really good paper that was written by Dr. Paul Walton, who's connected to the Parent Apart program. And that's in the October 2021 edition of Context, which is a fantastic paper to read, which explains some of the systemic ideas that are being applied to the program, and probably very useful to read alongside this episode as well. So we hope you enjoy the episode, and thank you for listening.
Welcome, Claire and Cam, to The Systemic Way. We're really happy to have you here today. And I'm just briefly going to say today that we're going to be speaking to Claire Field and Cam Core from the Parenting Apart program, which is a four-week structured therapeutic approach for separating parents.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's lovely to have you here today. And I guess Cesar and I were thinking that maybe a good place to start in terms of our conversation would be to hear a little bit about how the Parenting Apart program came into being?
Yeah, let's ask Claire start that because she's always quite good with her story. So go on, Claire.
Thank you, Cam. Thank you ever so much for inviting us to the podcast today. It's really quite exciting and nerve-wracking, really. You think, oh my God, to say everything right. But I'm just going to say it as it is. Lots of people ask me, why is it I do what I do? And I can honestly say it comes from my own personal experience from when I was a child and also as an adult going through a divorce myself with three children. But what stays with me and will always stay with me is my journey as a child going through my childhood with, unfortunately, my parents separating when I was only 2 years old. So I can't really remember too much of the conflict. But what I do remember is definitely missing out on having a father and somebody to call dad. And my sister and I were just really dropped off at the end of the drive and picked back up and, you know, just felt really quite, I don't know, unnatural. So growing up, my mother remarried and my stepfather, who unfortunately was an alcoholic, which then turned my mom into a very serious heavy drinker too. So my sister's life and mine became chaotic. We never knew what was happening from one minute to the next. And even to the outside world, it looked really okay because we lived in quite a nice home. We went to private school. It just looked okay. We were absolutely lost inside. And because the only help we had was when the police arrived, really to try and stop some of the domestic violence that my sister and I were involved with, in a sense, my parents fighting. The only reprieve we had is when they take my stepfather away to the cell for the evening. But again, he was always allowed to return back the next morning. And I think the whole fear, the real fear of not knowing what was happening from one minute to the next and not really being able to feel safe and secure even when we went to bed, will live with me forever. And I really don't want or wish any child ever to go through what we went through. So everything we do and why we do it is to really try and make a difference and to help children and families today. Even when you're going through difficult times and it happens, but to not have the severe consequences that my sister and I went through. So the Parenting Apart program started to evolve, 15 years ago. It seems like yesterday, but time flies. But I set up my own contact centre after working with social services for many years, to help support families in difficult times, especially going through divorce and separation, where lots of families, unfortunately, stop communicating, stop actually, you know, socializing, but actually having a sort of relationship. And then, of course, the children end up very much caught in the middle. So they would actually access a contact centre sometimes when they've entered into the court arena. And the judge would ask them to go into a contact centre to set up the sessions between the non-resident parent and the child. And I was one of the first contact centres to deliver the separated information parenting programme, which is actually funded and commissioned through CAFCAS, which is the Children and Families Court Advisory Support Service. Mm-hmm. And I just saw a huge opening. I just thought parents are coming in, not together, but in different parenting groups, to have 4 hours of really quite, informative information about emotional impact to children when parents aren't able to continue to communicate and have a parent-working relationship. And I thought, what can I do here? How can I help? So I just managed to, logistically say to a mom, look, would you be interested if you had some really good support and help to sit down and have perhaps a cup of coffee with dad, with me, so we can look at helping you as a parent make the right decisions for your children rather than the court arranging that? And it just started to say, parents started saying, yes, we'll do it. And that's where we collated then an arena where parents would come and sit down. And we'd start to look at how they communicated and what they, it's not just about communication, it's how you talk to each other. But most importantly, how they felt about still continuing to be the best parents possible after separation and divorce. And then really for the next 12 months, 18 months, I had a production company basically live, eat and sleep with me. I don't know how they coped, but they did, to watch everything that we did and to implement a process which could then be a written manual for first even just bringing parents in individually, helping support parents then come in together to sit down, and also then how to really help change the mindset from really quite warring parents who didn't like each other at all, but to then help change their mindset into how they can continue to be the best parents possible and to start to form a respectful parent working relationship. So that's it in a nutshell, really.
Oh,
it
wow. also
from the contact centre, which I lived in.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Where in the country was this?
I was actually based in the West Midlands, in Stourbridge with the contact centre. Which I ran for just under 7 years. And then really from there, we really put every ounce of time and energy into continuing to promote and to develop the Parenting Apart programme. And that's really well. So Cam came along to join the team and help me on my journey. And it's become our journey now, which is lovely.
Yeah, and it'd be great to hear from you, Cam, about how you became part of that journey.
Yeah, it was about, it's going to be about 5 years now when I was introduced.
You look good on it.
I was introduced to Claire actually by my husband. Apparently Claire had been a bit of a, kept contacting my husband for some sort of some business support, I suppose. It was more so around that. And he kept saying, this woman keeps pestering me, Cam, and I don't know why she keeps speaking to me. And I was like, it's because you're nice, do you know what I mean? And then he goes, look, go and speak to my wife. She does that kind of work that you do, do you know what I mean? And that's really where our journey began. I met with Claire and she told me about the programme and that she was getting a psychologist on board to do this work. And because of my own experience of working in the social care sector, I've been working in frontline social services for over 15 to 20 years, where I've worked with asylum seekers and refugees. I've worked with at the NSPCC, where I've worked with high levels of conflicting cases, where we work with sex offenders, high end of mental health, where we do high end risk assessments. So actually, when I met with Claire, I was already working in a systemic team at the Birmingham Children's Trust, where we were already doing lots of work where children were, where we were working with children where they were looking at reunifying them back to the parents' home, or we were doing some work where children were on the edge of care, where we were supporting family relationship in that sort of arena. So when I met with Claire, I was very much like, actually, we should be doing this with every single family, not just the families in private law proceedings. And actually, why are we not doing this at the front end of our children's services? Like, in fact, all our social workers should be doing this work if we're in contact with families and we know there's a mother and father in that house. Why are we not sitting parents together instantly and having that conversation with them? So really, that's where my journey began with Claire. And so I kind of looked at the program with the psychologist at that time, Sarah Morgan, was developing that for us. And I really started thinking about the sort of the systemic ideas around my learning. And as a practitioner, actually, if we could embed some of that into the program, it'd be really, really helpful in shifting parents to where we want them to think about. So really, that's where my journey with Claire began. We sort of worked with the psychologist together, thinking about that. And then we met Paul Walton, really. And he was introduced to us through Dr. Paul Gaffney, who's still a very good dear friend of ours. He lives in Ireland. And he was really interested in taking the Parenting Apart programme there and still wants to take the Parenting Apart programme there. And that's when me and Paul sort of redeveloped the programme again about thinking and about more of the systemic thinking in this process and actually thinking, getting practitioners to develop some of this systemic way of working, because it's really important, especially in our front end of our services. So that's really how our journey started, really.
Yeah, I'm really interested in the bit you were talking about, Claire, about this production company that followed you around to make a manual. How did that come about? What was that process like?
It was really quite, I would say, exciting sometimes. It actually was really quite it was definitely a way of looking at how you practice, but also having a reflection on it, in a sense that they weren't trying to be the experts, but what they were trying to do is really look at every accountability of how we positioned parents, how we looked at setting up the room, how we asked parents to come into the room first and foremost. How would I start those conversations with parents? What was my role? What was my position? And really helping parents understand, most importantly, our place of support. Because I think what happens is when we're asking practitioners to go in and look at supporting parents, certainly in conflict, I say this quite often. Sometimes, you know, you feel like you could just be chewed up and spat out in seconds. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, they've got to find a person or something to blame. And if you don't really hold your position in a very, what I call, strong and confident way, it can be very easy for them to really make you feel that you're unable to help, because you just think this is too much. So it really helped me explore my practice and obviously my role in helping parents. But also the biggest thing that I thought, well, I know, is I actually became a learning curve. I became a learning example to parents, without saying I know it all, without saying I want to know it all. And I'd also say to my parents, I'm not Nanny McPhee and I haven't got a magic wand. But by helping parents, being able to say good morning to each other, by just even how they walk in a room together, how they even acknowledge one another, how they actually then start to communicate together. And most importantly, remembering that everything we're doing is to actually prioritise the emotional needs of their children. And using that to the fullest, I always managed to get parents to really, what I call, think before they spoke, and to really look at what they were doing themselves as parents, harming their children if they weren't able to do that. So it's a real strong arena that you can bring to helping parents understand. But I became probably the bigger parent for a minute, and that's not, again, saying I know it all. But I would say to Dad, hold on a minute. Can I pretend to be you for a minute? And I'm going to talk to Mom. And can you both just listen to what I'm saying and how I'm talking and what I'm saying in this conversation? Yeah, Dad will say, yeah, all right then, Claire, off you go then. You know. So I would then say, I'm in role play now. And I would say, Mom, I hear what you're saying. Not that I'm agreeing with all of it, because I feel I can't. But I feel if you could be a bit more adaptable and understand how hard it's been for me not to see the children and not to be involved in their day-to-day care as I used to be, I feel that would really benefit and help me and you to get along better. And I feel that if you could just support the children to perhaps give me a call in the week, or I'm happy to phone you, that would really help too. I feel that if we could draw a line, put things that we can't change to the side at the moment and concentrate with Claire's help moving forward, that would really benefit. So, yeah, please, Mom, if we could do that. And I'd come out of role play. Basically, the Mom would turn around and she went, well, I'm telling you something now, Claire. If he spoke to me like that, I wouldn't be divorcing him. I said, yeah. Okay, well, you know, but I think it the learning curve is, as I said, I don't know it all, but if we take out the conflict, take away some of the real angst from the personal relationship, because that's where it all stems, but helping to educate parents that actually for their children, who are half mom, half dad, to be able to have also a childhood that they can actually have the self-worth and self-identity, that even though mom and dad don't wish to live together anymore, they don't need to persecute each other. Do you know what I mean? Because all you're doing is taking away that child's identity and that confidence and self-worth. So, you know, we don't always do it right. And actually becoming parents is probably the hardest and biggest thing we'll ever do in our lives, because it changes everything so drastically. And it is, it's a massive learning curve and it's a learning journey. So by helping parents really look at it in that way and putting their personal issues to that side is really the turning point of how then they wish to continue until they take their last breath into being the best parents possible. And that's where we help parents really understand that we're not here to judge, and we're not here to take sides, we're not here to pass any criticism at all. But what we are helping them do is realize that if they don't change where the conflict is impacting their children emotionally, they are the only two people who will be responsible, and who are, because they're their parents, to harming their children.
Thank you, Claire. I've got so many questions that I want to ask you more about that whole process, but I was also holding in mind you, Cam, and I was thinking about you when you first joined the journey of joining with Parenting Apart. And I was thinking, there's something about hearing about the program and seeing it on paper, and we just had a good example of it in action. And I was wondering what it was like for you in those early days of being in the room with parents and going through that process.
It was actually, I was just as nervous and anxious as the parents. And to be honest, when I first heard about the programme and then I went and watched Claire, obviously I've got a very different, we all adopt our different styles, our positions in the way that we work. And for me, it was a very different way of working. It was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to take more of a, less of a curious stance sometimes, more of a directive position, which sometimes doesn't, you know, holding more of a linear position in some of this work, do you know what I mean? And not being overly questioning the parents in that perspective. So for me, it was a little bit tricky to, it was almost like I was learning to do sort of basic things, what I used to do in my social work, if that makes sense. So it was a little bit challenging. But when I started doing the work and having the space, because, you know, the program, when we're working through the process of the program, just to give you some context of that, we do some individual work with our parents. So we don't just like bring our parents together and start doing this work. We have to always position ourselves, you know, our highest context marker, which is what we say all the time, safety before we can do anything. So when we're doing our work, you know, we've got a seven-step process that we take. So we take that quite seriously in the way that we work. Do you know what I mean? So really thinking about doing a risk assessment. So I was very keen on understanding the family, the referral, getting dad to send his referral, because he's going to have a very different narrative to mom's narrative on that referral. So really getting to understand what was the risks associated to that case. And actually, what does that parent see the risk as the other parent? Because one of the things that I've identified in this place of work is that actually there's lots of parents will bring in lots of risk factors about the other parent, or this parent can't do that. So they'll say that that's a safeguarding, when necessarily in our world of safeguarding, it's not really safeguarding, if that makes sense. It's low level family relationship breakdown stuff. So really it was quite nerving to work in this particular way. But when I started working in the semi-structured way, where it allowed me as a practitioner to work with the family in the context of that family and what they were bringing in, it allowed me that flexibility to work in a bit more of a creative way. So I actually really enjoy doing the work. Do you know what I mean? Most people say, oh, you like doing that. And then there's some families, obviously, you know, we get the high end ones where me and Claire, we get lots of court directed work. And those can be really, really challenging, because obviously we're called in to fix the family, really. That's what we're directed a lot of the time, isn't it, Claire? Can you fix this family? And we're like, you want us to fix this family who have been in the court arena for 5-6 years, and I'm not exaggerating here, this is a typical case that we're working where parents haven't spoken to each other, and you want me to fix that in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, the expectations from the systems that we put families into, you know, I think, you know, we've talked about the article that Paul Walton's written around the adversarial process of litigation. Actually, when we're working with parents, we're asking them to work together. But in the court arena, often that doesn't happen in that way. Although they say that, they still got their own legal teams around them. They've got their own defensive positioning. They feel that they're in some kind of criminal case where they have to position themselves to justify or give evidence. Whereas in our space, it's not about evidence building. It's about co-parenting. It's about relationship work, which is slightly different to a legal system. So yes, it's been exciting, but also challenging as well.
Thanks, Cam. I'm really interested in where this work sits. I know you've began to talk about it being within the court arena, or an alternative to court is how I'm hearing it, or mandated by court at times. Mm-hmm. But just that story you told us, Claire, about I would still be together if he spoke to me like that. It's making me think about what Cam said about the need for it to be in the early help and the front door services. And I'm interested in, is it in that arena yet? And where else do people access the program?
So at majority of the work initially was undertaken through the private law proceedings. That's where a lot of the work that Claire was originally getting. Since we've developed the intervention, we are now being commissioned by local authorities. So we have now partnered with 4 local authorities. We're bringing a 5th one on board, York. So we're partnered with Hillingdon, Warwickshire, Torbay, Hertfordshire, and we're also being partnering with York in December. So we'll be training. So our partnerships really is developing, we train their practitioners, they attend a 3-day training. They decide who their practitioners is, but what prior to them looking at their practitioners, what we do is we work with the team manager. So they don't just decide who their practitioners are. We need to help local authorities to think about how this fits in their systems and where does it fit in their systems. And actually, what are the touch points when it comes to conflict? Where are there heavy loads of cases? So it's not, is it at the front door? Actually, there's lots of cases. You'll be quite surprised. You know, there's a number of local authorities are often requested to write Section 37 reports. Local authorities are often involved in court proceedings, especially in private law proceedings, or local authorities are expected to put supervision orders in place. So what we're doing is we're asking local authorities to go and have a look at where their touch points is so that they train the best people so that intervention can be offered to those families at those greatest needs of touch points, if that makes sense. So we work with the local authority in that way. We then train their practitioners, but also alongside that, we offer them, we go and touch base with the practitioners by meeting them every 3 months. So we offer them that sort of reflective space about helping them to think about the processes, about the cases, and actually, how are they managing the conflict in the cases? Because it's not really easy piece of work. We can be personally triggered by the conflict. Do you know what I mean? So we offer that reflective space for our practitioners. But also what that's helped us do is re-look at our training and re-look at our supervision model to think about, well, actually, what is it that people need when we're working in this space to sort of develop some of that early evidence building around this hot topic, really, I would say, do you know what I mean? But also, we're often commissioned by local authorities as well to do this work because they're really struggling themselves to do this work. We're also commissioned by CAFCAS in the West Midlands region, where we deliver this support, early help, where they've identified families that would benefit from this. And also we get lots of families from independent social workers, psychologists often recommend the programme. And also we also get referrals from schools and places like that as well. So
family law solicitors, don't we?
Oh, yeah, and family law solicitors, they're our biggest referrer.
Mm-hmm. Lovely.
And I think if I can just say, I think the most important thing is to look at is, as we say, anybody that's going through a difficult time, the first thing they'll probably say, certainly in a relationship, whether you're parents or not, the first thing that goes is the communication, because you stop talking, you stop sharing, you stop saying how you feel, you stop saying what you'd like, what you don't, and all the rest of it. It just becomes really difficult to express that or to say it. So where we're saying to schools, we're saying to GPs, we're saying to all different other professionals, certainly for even employers, for employees, you know, to get out of bed some days, to go to work, and to do really quite, you know, any sort of level of job or work, if you're not feeling good and you really are struggling within a relationship, and then where there are children involved, then the earlier the better we can help. We can actually allow, and most importantly, get parents to know what is available. Then, you know, most parents today have to pay for any level of service or support. And even if they want to go into court, they have to pay for the application to go into court. They have to probably pay for some sort of legal advice. So what we're saying is, look, it's all about relationships. You know, it's even how you get on with your parents, or how your parents get on with you, how when you become a parent and how you parent. And then, you know, it's a complete different way of how perhaps mom might do it to how dad might do it. But of course, then it's the effect on the children. So we're asking as early as possible, and also most importantly, to allow the communities to know that before anything should arise where it comes into like a conflict or trouble, let's inform, let's knowledge communities of what's available. So when things aren't feeling too good, or things aren't going as well as we want them to, or we're worried about something, we can actually identify where we can go and knock on the door and put our hands up and say, excuse me, over here, please, I need some help. Because we know from our mental health training, one of the biggest mental health preventatives is actually being able to show that we can ask for help and feel not ashamed, but feel proud. I always praise my parents massively when they come into the room and they actually sit down. I say the first thing is, well done. If your child was sitting here right now, or your son or daughter or your children, they'd be saying, thank you, mom, thank you, dad, because you're doing something to help yourselves, which automatically then helps them. So wherever we can get, and wherever we can offer, and certainly work in a collaborative way with other professionals and other organisations and other resources, because there is a massive need within the community at the moment, certainly from obviously lots of different aspects, but with COVID, the mental health crisis, the children, the young people, young adults, we just need to be really aware and helping people be aware of what is available to help them.
Thank you. I mean, I'm curious for us to go into sort of what the steps are and what the programme looks like. But I was just wondering, when you were talking then about the need, like what are the statistics of parents separating? You know, what is the population that you're kind of, or roughly around?
Yeah. Well, it said that 50% of our children live in separated households. So if we're looking at that, so that may not be 50% of those children are with parents that are going through divorce, because, you know, marriage isn't always seen in the marriage way. If that makes, people are cohabiting now often before they get married, but they sometimes have children before they get married. So that's what the statistic says. So if 50% of our children are living in separated households, what it's also estimated that actually 50% of those 50% of children that live in separated households almost lose contact with the non-resident parent and don't have a relationship with them. And our statistics are actually quite high in comparison if you look at other countries when it comes to separation. They are doing things a lot differently, do you know what I mean? So in that sense, you know, that they don't always necessarily see the court as the first step. There's lots more early intervention, and early specialist support is offered really to those families where you've got high levels of other things like safeguarding issues, if that makes sense. And really that's the only time we should be intervening in family life, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. that we have a public duty to do that. Also, if you think about, if you look at mental health rates, Jeremy, now I don't need to say that. I don't even need a statistic. I mean, everyone knows the whole country's in some court, some family or some family member is having some mental health or emotional breakdown. Now, what has been identified that any child who is likely to go through a separation where there's family conflict, it automatically increases the emotional dysregulation for a child up to 16%. So even without anything happening, a child is likely to experience that anyway. If a parent has, there's a report by Mooney and that research highlights if the parent is of low mental health, there's low levels of parental conflict, there's a relationship with the child and there's no conflict, a child will manage that process very well. It would not become an adverse experience in a child's life. At the moment, it's becoming a traumatic experience in a child's life because it's frequent, especially with the way that the court system is going. And also these families are not being caught by our children's services. They're only being caught at the latter part of their journey, not at the beginning part. So a child's already experienced quite a traumatic event through this process already. There's higher rates also. What I've also researched is there's, when it comes to fathers, especially men, you know, men's suicidal rate is increasing.
Mm.
They were saying is at the age of 50, there's a higher suicidal rate for men. A lot of our fathers, and I'm not exaggerating here, a lot of our fathers are so desperate to access our service sometimes. And they tell us, I want to kill myself. I don't know what to do. And that's fathers and mothers who are not having contact with their children. And you know, we're having to make sure that they're okay, even reporting to children's services in some of these cases. We get people ringing us on a daily basis asking for help. Do you know what I mean? We do free consultations to parents. And me and Claire would say that half of our day is spent doing free consultations.
Mm.
But I also think what's really important, if we can highlight, is certainly from the family court, is they're ordering for children to attend children's therapy, child therapy, but they're not ordering the parents. So the child is then put into therapy and obviously given quite a huge amount of support, absolutely incorrect. But unfortunately, if the child is coming out of that therapy environment to then obviously continue a life, but the parents haven't changed their stance and the conflict is still there and there's nothing different, then I'm sorry, we're not going to see the outcomes that we should be seeing. We're going to see even further damage because the child, again, will lose that part of their resilience in how to deal with conflict. So that's why the Parenting Apart programme, alongside with other obviously programmes or helping parents understand the emotional needs of their children when going through it, is so, so important. And to have a practitioner that feels confident, capable, and in order to challenge, in order to safeguard the emotional needs of children, because it's law. We all have a duty of care to protect children. And one of the biggest protectors we have to look in, certainly when it comes to divorce and separation, is the emotional needs of children, because they are emotionally attached to their mother and father 90% of the time, 99.9% of the time. So when that starts to become dysregulated and the child is becoming very caught in the middle of it, that is where we get parents to really understand this is your joint responsibility until you take your last breath. And if you want to be the best parents possible, then you need to take this completely to the highest of the agenda to make sure you're prioritising it. Because you've talked about school holidays, you've talked about private schools, you've talked about the best trainers on their feet, you've talked about the best jumper or jacket you want to buy them. Forget it. Forget it. It won't mean anything unless you get this in place, that you can both of you prioritise this over and above everything else. It will all become irrelevant because they will be harmed. And that's where, you know, the programme is designed to do, is to help educate parents and teach parents that, you know, Children are only children for such a short period of time. Childhood is only a few years. And then, you know, as they come into an adult, you know, this, we want children to grow into young adults, to be strong and have identity and confidence to go left or right. But unfortunately, if they've had a childhood that has become where it becomes an adverse childhood experience, it can have a completely different outcome.
Can I ask, is that area of this programme, the kind of education, the psychoeducation aspect of it, and really focusing on the voice of the child, I'm interested if that's what separates the Parent and a Part programme from like a mediation service.
Well, I'm mediation trained, but I'm not accredited. And the reason I felt that I couldn't continue to become an accredited mediator is because I do feel at times parents do need strong, clear advice of the emotional harm to their children or child if they don't literally change from being in conflict to then continuing to be parents. Because we are social care practitioners that are trained within safeguarding, child protection, child in need, and also child development, it clearly comes as a duty of care 100% that we have to also give advice to parents that if this continues, or if they were doing things that was going to be again very clearly harming or potentially harming emotionally their children, then we have to obviously really make sure that we're informing them that the consequences could be XYZ. So with mediation, and there's some brilliant mediators out there, there's some brilliant social workers, etc., and all the rest of it. But with mediation, it's about really being able to offer suggestions and guidance really for parents, where we sit, and certainly from the Parenting Apart program and what it offers, we make it very clear to parents that if we see or hear or feel or think that either parent are trying to derail the process for their own benefit over and above the needs of the child, we will bring that evidence to them and ask for change. I mean, we all get stuck, and that's fair enough, and we do, because we're in conflict. But when it's being brought to the surface of saying that can't continue because that would actually harm or make that child feel, if that parent can't change or is unwilling to change, then we would terminate the process and we would refer that immediately to children's social services for potentially emotional harm, because we have to protect children.
That's a strong position you take.
Yeah.
Cam, did you want to come in there?
Yeah, I suppose also as well, one of the things that with mediators that they may not necessarily have the training, like Claire said, in relation to safeguarding, you know, all our practitioners have to have the enhanced safeguarding training so they understand quite clearly what does harm look like and what is the thresholds of harm as well, if that makes sense for me. But equally, you know, like Claire talked about, you know, child development, when we're talking about child development, we're not expecting our practitioners to have know everything about child development, but the basic knowledge around child development, what is the developmental stage of a three-year-old when you're talking to parents, so you can talk to parents from what a three-year-old would be able to think and feel, if that makes sense. We do we also talk a lot about attachment, do you know what I mean? Because it's really important if we're helping children to have secure, safe relationships, they have to be able to trust the parental relationship and walk from one home to the next home, live across two homes. So there's got to be some relational similarities in the parenting when it comes to that. So in our work, we don't just talk about, oh, where is the child going to live? We talk about what does the relationship look like with that child? What will that routine bounding structure look like? What would holidays look like with dad, and what would holidays look like with mom? What about when you're going to have difficulties in the future? You know, little Jimmy needs a pair of shoes. You know, does that need to be scrapped out in front of little Jimmy? You get the shoes or you get the shoes. Actually, how do we have discussions about our children without getting into conflict? So we really talk about their communication patterns. We really borrow from Carl's Toms as well, you know, his recursive patterns. You know, we talk about, actually, it sounds like when you get into blaming language, you get defensive. So we stop our parents and we get them to notice what they are doing. And we begin to externalize the conflict in their relationship. We talk about how conflict becomes part of their relationship and how that's the way that they've managed their relationship now. Actually, that makes it feel safe that we don't have to talk to each other. But what we do is we help them to develop those healthy patterns of relationship. What does that look like if dad was to say that? We talk about their triggers in each other. So actually, I don't like it when he comes up to the garden door, knocks on the doorbell really hard. Actually, dad, could you possibly just do one ring then? Because that really triggers mom. Just using those kind of an example for me. So lots of things can trigger us in lots of different ways for me. So we help the parents to identify what those triggers are. So they can begin a little bit more mindful and thoughtful of the other person and also step into the shoes of the other and step into the shoes of their child. Because if little Jimmy is standing there watching them do all this, we get them to think about actually what would that feel and experience look like. So we get them to internalize what that would feel like for their little child, who he's for, who can't speak, who doesn't have the cognitive ability to think about why my parents are arguing in that way, who doesn't have the rational thinking. They don't. All they will hear is, why did you not? They will think it's their fault. It's they're to blame, because all they can hear is their name.
I was obviously, we're lucky we've got both of you here today to speak with us. But I was thinking of, if we had parents here, if we had a child here, and maybe we've done a bit of role play, or you've been doing some role play in this in our conversation so far, I'm just wondering what is the feedback that you generally sort of get from parents who've completed the program, or do you get a young person, what they might say?
Well, there's a number of things that we've done. So we've created social impact reports, and that's something that we've done, which is quite different in this area of work. It's not often recognised as a piece of research, but what we do is we do pre-questionnaires with our parents before they engage in the programme. So each parent will complete a co-parenting scale for us to understand where they are in that relationship, in that co-parenting relationship. And also, one of the things that we do is we get each parent to complete an SDQ questionnaire. Now, people will question the validity of that, but hey, it's a questionnaire and it's something that we get from each parent when it comes to that, okay? At the end of our program, they will complete a questionnaire again. The same questionnaire they will complete at the end of that. What we try and do is touch base with them after 3 months again, get them to complete the same questionnaires again. Now, through the social impact reports that we have done, which is done by Heidi Fisher, who's an economist, and what she's established, and she's gone back to the parents, she's an independent consultant, and what she's done is from those questionnaires identified the progress that we have made with those parents, not just from a relationship base, but also from a base of what are the social return on investment for public sector spending. So we've been able to sort of prove some of the measures that we have through that. But we've also created a video. I don't know whether you've seen that, If You Really Love Me. But actually, that's been some of the direct feedback from children about what they think about what they would like to be different. But a lot of our work also, I think it's really important for people to understand, we do things in a slightly different way. And it doesn't may sit well with a lot of our practitioners or people that think that. We don't work with the child. And the reason why we don't work with the child at the beginning part of this process is because we don't want our children to know that their parents can't do this, okay? It's really disheartening for a child. Us as practitioners, we're often being asked to do things with children. Go and tell that child they've got to go and see mummy and daddy. It's not our responsibility to do that. We're not on the birth certificates. It's the parents' responsibility to do that. So what we say to our parents, that's something that we would like you to tell your children, that you want them to have a relationship with their mummy and daddy. And what we will do is we will come back and see the child once you've demonstrated to us that you can communicate, because otherwise we're going to go back and dishearten your child again and tell your child that your mom and dad really can't do this. So that's not a really nice place. So we will go and see the child after we've done the work with the parents.
And I just want to say as well, Cam, when we talk about this to obviously other professionals and even the judges, we say, why are you asking the child to do something that the parents aren't prepared to do themselves? Why are we asking the child to do this and not the parents? So I'll tell you what, let's leave the child where they are at the moment. Please, parents, come to the table. Let's start to sit down. Let's start to talk and let's start to plan to how then you two can continue to make sure that you're being the best parents possible. To even actually, do you know what? We're really sorry that we haven't been able to talk and we haven't really been able to get on. But mommy and daddy, we've met this funny lady called Klaus, helped us sit down and really talk, and with chocolate biscuits. And do you know why? Because we love you very much. And now what we're going to do is we're going to actually say we're sorry to each other and we're sorry to you. And this is our promise. And our promise is now we're going to continue to be the best parents possible. May not always get it right, but we're going to now do this. So by leading and asking parents to lead by example and to be able to demonstrate their love and their commitment to their child, even when things go wrong, really helps them feel actually it is okay to do so. But the last thing we will do is go and see the child and put unsavory or promises to a child that we can't commit to, but we then say to the parents, please do so. That's a very, very important part of the factor of the program as well. We hand back the responsibility to the parents where it rightly should be, and if the parents are really struggling and can't do that, then obviously we can also raise that as a concern if necessary, because obviously the emotional needs of that child.
I want to move us towards thinking about the different steps and some of the kind of the main challenges and the learning that you've all had through those, maybe looking at the different steps that the program does. So it's a 7-step program, I understand, right? And it begins with step one being the entering the program. I'm interested in how you kind of contract the work with families and what some of those kind of, what comes out, what learning has come out of your experiences of doing that initial important part of the process with families?
Well, if we're saying safety is the highest context marker, then we have a duty to make sure that everyone feels safe. Everyone's already emotionally heightened, okay? And emotions can play, emotions can sometimes help us not make the right decisions, if that makes sense to me. And especially for parents in this context, you know, that they're already making decisions about their children based on their own view of the other parent, if that makes sense. So if I don't like my ex-husband, that means my child doesn't like my ex-husband or my ex-wife. Yeah. So my decisions about my child are based on my decision about how I feel about that person. So what we try to do is make sure that we understand what the risks are when we're entering into the program. We understand what stage the parents are at when it comes to their separation journey. Have they just separated? Are they in court or are they coming out of court? Do you know what I mean? Or actually, are they in children's services and on a child protection plan? We need to understand that. And one of the other things that we need to understand is who is the network around the child, okay? Because that's really important, because we don't work in isolation at Parenting Apart program. We work in a collaborative way. We're here to repair a family's journey. We're helping to restore relationship. We're not here to make things worse, if that makes sense. So that early stage is really, really critical, and getting as much information as possible to understand what are we positioning ourselves into when we're going to work with this family. The next step is what we call discovering and positioning. And this is really helping parents to think about, really giving the parents the opportunity to let go of some of their story, because they both come with a different narrative. They both hold a narrative which is not very nice about each other. They really want to tell you their story. So that is us listening to their story and understanding it from their perspective. We don't have to agree with their story. We're just there to listen and acknowledge their feelings. But for me, it's my assessment as well. And what I'm assessing for there really is thinking about what is the emotional regulation that this parent is presenting to me? How rational is their conversation? But also through that, I'm understanding not just the parent's journey, I'm understanding the relationship between the parent and each child. Because I'm asking them almost like in a timeline, okay, tell me what happened for little Jimmy before you were born, so I can understand where were the ruptures or the ruptures in this relationship line for this child. What could have been the break in the attachment? Where was dad? Where was mom?
What's the intention there, Cam?
It's really important because that helps me to understand how far entrenched they are in their negative relationship. When did that happen? And actually also identify the risk factors around that relationship and also to understand the child's journey. Because remember, I don't see the child. I'm hearing it from the parents, what that child's journey is. And it's really relevant because when I'm talking to the parents, I start beginning to amplify to the parents what that child's experience could have looked like. Actually, it sounds like those disagreements were at the very early stages of your child's life. You know, and I remind parents about the 1001 days of the child's developmental stage. And already the child has experienced this level of conflict in the relationship. And by doing that, I can position them in the child's thinking, position them as a parent rather than the ex-partner meeting their ex-partner. You're going to be meeting your co-parent, if that makes sense. So through that process, I'm beginning to hear their journey, but also formulate what that child's journey may have looked like. So when we get to the changing the mindset, really we bring both parents together there. We do all our work with parents together. And we've been doing that over Zoom or face-to-face. A lot of our work has been done by Zoom and it's worked really well because one parent's in Wales, you know, worked with a parent, one's in Wales and one's in London, one's in south of London and one's moved to the Midlands. So accessibility becomes easier for these parents. And changing the mindset really is bringing them parents together to think about what kind of relationship and position them in their child's world, to get them to think about and mentalise it from the child's perspective. We often do get disagreements at that very early stage, which is fine, do you know what I mean? And then we start helping them to start building a plan around their parenting relationship, which is like our step four.
Before we move on to that, it might be a nice punctuation to think about some of the systemic ideas that you draw upon during those, I mean, quite high conflict moments. And I mean, trying to change the mindset, I imagine being very challenging in particularly within this context. So, yeah, what are some of the kind of systemic ideas that come to mind?
Well, the main is the position of the practitioner. It's very important, our positioning. We don't get embroiled by siding by each. So in this context, neutrality is key. Even if you don't agree, we as a practitioner do not say, oh, yes, I agree with you, mom or dad. We may acknowledge what that parent has said, okay, and we may make a note of it, but we never agree with either parent. We do not side in any possible way because, again, parents want you to side. They will make you side by one or the other, unless it's a safeguarding risk. We do not take sides. You know, I'm going to give you an example. I remember I was on a call once and mom goes to me. She goes, Cam, he cheated on me. Do you think that's okay that he cheats on me and he treated me like this? And I was like, look, mom, I can understand. That's been really, really tricky for you. And it's been really hard for you. But it's not for me to say whether that is okay or not, if that makes sense. Not for me to say whether what dad did to you is right or wrong. What I am saying is dad is saying that he is sorry for what's happened, but equally, you still got a child in the midst of it. So does that mean that if somebody's had an affair, that they don't have access to their child? Is that what you're saying to me, Jeremy? So again, these kind of conversations are really, really important. We get embroiled into them. So those are some of we externalize conflict from them. We get them to think about that. You know, I actually look at John Burnham's quadrant around PPRC. Do you know what I mean? Actually, most of our parents come with problems saturated. They love sitting in their problems. They love telling us about their problems. What we try to do is look at in their problems in a different way. So we try and look at possible solutions in this. Okay, if you're saying to me that this is how it's going to be, what does that look like for your child? What does that feel like for your child if you're saying that this situation cannot change or you can't do this? So we get them to think about solutions. We get them to look at their wider network of family and friends who can be supportive and resourceful in this arena. Do you know what I mean? We get them to reflect about a time when things were not like that, or how they manage conflict with other people, like in a work colleague. We don't stop scrapping with each other. We don't stop fighting each other. We don't stop calling each other names and being nasty to each other. We actually manage it quite constructively. So one of the things that we do is we help our parents to think about how destructive conflict in their relationship and shift them from this place to a constructive place. And we do that through the voice of their child.
Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued in how you manage that tricky position of remaining neutral in the face of family conflict, where there might be real strong stories around the reasons why the family have broken up or the impact that one person is having, and remaining neutral. And I'm understanding that that means remaining neutral even within the child being centered within all of this.
Let me give you an example. Okay. I've got two parents in front of me arguing about whatever they want to argue. Okay. I listen to them arguing. I observe them for a couple of minutes. And what I do is, when I'm observing them, I ask them to stop. I ask them to stop after a little while, okay? And what I often do is I ask them to think about what was the argument about. I ask them to reflect on what happened in that moment, how quickly they fell into that conflict. And we was only having a conversation about, I don't know, about who's going to drop little Jimmy off where, do you know what I mean? And so we sit there and we get them to sit and think and reflect what happened in that moment, okay? And what was that disagreement about? Was it about the shoes? Was it about this? What was it that triggered you to respond in that way? So what we do is we start looking for blaming and accusing language. And what we do is we help the other parent to reframe that in a slightly different way. Okay. I'm guessing, Dad, when you say that, you actually don't mean to come in this way. I'm guessing it's coming from this positioning, do you know what I mean? So what we do is we get them to say, okay, let's have the same conversation and let's think about doing it a different way. And that's when we start doing the role plays. We get them to do things in a way that they've stopped doing with each other. They've stopped caring. We get them to be a little bit compassionate towards each other. We get them to think about each other as a co-parent rather than the enemy or the person that's building the evidence here. So getting them to sit in the child's position, we get them to think, okay, if your little son, who's 3 years old, what do you think they would say when they're sitting here? I'm struggling here. I often tell my parents when they get into disagreement, I say, you know, this is really hard for me to listen, and I'm an adult, and, you know, I've been working with you for the last 2-3 sessions, do you know what I mean? I'm struggling. If you can do that in front of me, I'm guessing that it's quite easy for you to do that in front of your little son or your little daughter. What do you think they would hear from that conversation? So we get them to do the sensory processing of the child, what they're likely to hear, feel, see, what would that look like? We get them to think about where do you think that child is in their flight, fight and freeze position? We get them to notice their child when that's happening. What does that feel like? If you were a three-year-old, how do you think that we get them to position themselves back into that child's world? How do you think you would feel?
And that's what helps you remain in that neutral domain.
I also use the idea of a car crash, and I put the child in the car. So I always say to the parents, you're standing on one side of the road and the other parent standing on the other side of the road. And your child's in the passenger seat. And there's been a car crash in front and your child's in the back. What do you think parent on that side will see? So I'll get them to think that actually it's the same accident. We've all seen it, but we've all got different perspectives on it. There's no one truth. And that, and that child's experience is going to be a different truth because they're the passenger. Treat your child as that passenger because that's what this conflict is doing. That car is the conflict.
I imagine that social constructionist position of multiple truths being very helpful in this domain.
So we, and we may not, you know, we, like us, me and Claire, we don't, we're not academics. You know, when I say academics, we don't always know the theory and what have you. But what we do know is that it's the practical stuff that practitioners need. As a practitioner, as a systemic practitioner, all I wanted to do was do my action and techniques. I just wanted to do action and techniques, you know what I mean? I was interested in the theory stuff, but I just wanted to say, how do you ask that question? Or tell me how you do that one. Why do we get that? Do you know what I mean? And externalizing is such a brilliant thing in this. Getting them to externalize it and getting them to think that, that they're not always in conflict and how it be part of their relationship is brilliant. It's brilliant when you use that with them.
Claire, did you want to come in here? I know you're trying to come in a couple of times.
Well, I just feel that I don't start any meeting until I've made my role and position very clear to parents. And I ask them then, are you accepting what I have just said in a sense of my support to you both and completely being impartial, but always, and I will carry the voice of your child throughout this and make sure that we're prioritising the emotional needs. Do you both get that? Do you both agree to that? And are you happy with that? They go, yes. I think, great. Okay. So then I bring it to... You know, if we want to build a respectful parent working relationship, two main ingredients in any relationship is respect and trust. OK, so we've got to start to rebuild that. And obviously from your personal relationship, I wasn't there, I wasn't involved. But what I am going to ask you both to do is just talk to each other about how you're feeling right now, because if we have an idea, and the most important thing what we do is when we ask somebody, how are you feeling? The next important thing is we shut up and we listen. And we listen, and even if we don't agree or with everything that's been said, your subconscious and your conscious brain will start going, no, I didn't mean that. No. Oh my God, yeah, I said that. Oh, yeah, she's right or he's wrong. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, got that. Because you've got some support around it to also think about it differently. But if we actually understand how mom's feeling at the moment, Dad, and mom, if we really understand how dad's feeling, then we can honestly look at how we can help, most importantly, to start to build your parenting relationship. Okay. Because if your child came home from be it anywhere else, be it school or a friend's house, or they'd been out for the day or something and said they weren't happy, something was happening to them, or they were really upset, instantly you'd be rolling your sleeves up and trying to do something to solve it. Correct? And they went, correct. I said, well, take this as the same situation, because they love you, mom, and they love you, dad, warts and all. Whether you cook the beans on toast the same way as mom does or dad doesn't, whether you have a, you know, a routine that you can both agree to or disagree, they love you and they need you both to be okay. So I make it very clear to the parents that we start to say how we feel. We don't have to go in and dissect and do a post-mortem, but very clearly to say, you know, and I do a role play again. I bring it in. So I'm mom for a minute and I'll be saying to dad, well, actually, dad, I feel very hurt. I feel very let down. I feel actually I am really cheesed off. I feel this has happened. That's happened. I feel mixed. I feel sad. I feel quite lonely. I feel scared. You know, whatever we feel that we can come into. And I give those examples to parents and that really helps them. And that I feel is one of the starting points for them both to understand that we are not here to pass judgment on them. Because, as I said, I'm divorced, I've got three children. I would be a complete hypocrite if I'm sitting here saying, you know, you've got to talk to your ex if I didn't. You know, my ex-husband, the father of my three children, we have a good parenting relationship, because that's something my children, I knew, needed for us to have, because they love him very much. And just because we're no longer in love with each other doesn't mean that we can't care for each other. That's why I say to parents, if you really love your children, then you'll at least want to care for what they love. I think for the podcast, and certainly for some of the mention, I think what would really come out, and, you know, again, is the social impact. Some of the figures and facts, really, and I haven't got them all in front of me, but I think that's really important to say that, you know, over working with 300 families, and certainly for a social return investment of nearly 10.3 million in what it saved the economy of, you know, mental health, GPs, you know, education stuff. We're very proud, aren't we, Cam? Because, you know, at the end of the day, we have saved and changed families for the better. And I, you know, I want to sing that to the hilltops.
Well, it's been lovely hearing the story and the development. And I think, I mean, myself, I took so much from hearing about how you have these conversations with families. Mm-hmm. Even some of the ways you phrase the questions and the intentions behind them, taking it into my practice, I think it's invaluable. I think people are going to really get a lot from this and your work. And I really look forward to the next stages of development. I'm keeping a close eye on the website and the YouTube channel. I was looking at the YouTube channel. So we'll put some links in there for people who want to gather more information. But thank you so much to you both for joining us.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. I think it'd just be really good, just before you go, just to get out of you, just in one sentence, maybe just a future hope for Parenting Apart.
Well, my future hope is that we have more systemic practitioners doing this work. The reason why I say that is because we're often overlooked in this area of work, especially when it comes to early intervention. And I do genuinely believe that this is a place for us to do this work. We're well equipped, even down to I'm intermediary level, and I'm quite confident in doing this work. And I feel that our frontline practitioners are not always given the valuable skills that they need to do this really important work. And actually, if we can educate them at the very early stage, give them the knowledge, give them the skills, and give them some of the basic fundamental things about working with families, I think we might have a real changed way of working. So that's thank what you. I hope for.
Claire, yourself?
Yeah, I just, for the future of the programme, I really hope it can continue to grow and to really help practitioners have the confidence and the ability to really help make a difference and a change for our children today and for tomorrow. Because without being able to really support the parents, and even at necessary challenge parents, the children haven't got a chance in hell. So we've got to do this in able to make the difference for the children. So by helping the mums and dads, we're definitely helping their children. And that's our children for our future.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you. Have a lovely weekend.
Have a good weekend. Bye, Cam. Sorry to make you late.
Let's go. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. All the best. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I suppose what's really stood out for me, you know, I am a child of separated parents, and I wish that my parents had perhaps taken part in a program like this, because I think it would have really benefited them and our family. And it was really good to hear from Cam and Claire just the examples that they gave. They really kind of take you into their process and some of the role plays, some of the questions that they ask, how they deal with high conflict and some of the sort of systemic approaches that they use within the program. So I think that was really helpful, and I think it would be really nice for people to hear.
Yeah, definitely. Really, it felt like a really useful discussion for me to think about how I might work with families going through conflict and how I might be able to take some of the things from the program, not kind of following the steps of the program, but their ideas and some of the dilemmas that they kind of talk about and how I might begin to apply that in my work. And the thing that really stuck out for me, Julie, was the enthusiasm and the passion that both Claire and Cam exude when they're talking about their work. And I can only imagine the impact of that will have on families actually that take part in the project, and how their energy for this way of working, their belief in their project, in their ways of working, and how that itself is a resource in helping families through very difficult times.
Absolutely. And I think there's such a need for this work. I think that's something else that they really explain. And that's part of their passion, because they see how much there is a need. And they obviously also see the results of that. And, you know, they've got feedback, they've got evidence from parents, from children about how much it's helped them.
Lovely. We hope you all enjoy, and please do leave any comments or questions or continue the conversations. So all the best.